You're listening to Richard Ellis Talks with Richard Ellis. If you're looking for some encouragement, words of hope, and maybe a laugh or two, that's exactly what Richard wants to share with you today. We know life can get pretty busy and complicated, so we're truly grateful you've chosen to take a break and listen to the program. Now, if you're not able to hang out with us for the entire program, you can always pick it back up at our website, richardellistalks.com. In fact, you can find all of Richard's talks right there waiting just for you, richardellistalks.com. So, with today's talk, here's Richard Ellis.
The title of the message today is The Outsider. There are a myriad of different types of people who come to a church like this. You can look around and see that. And that it's not about color, it's not about culture, it's not about economic status. It's just people with one common thing, searching for God, and in this case, through Jesus Christ. That's our background. When I'm thinking about the outsider, what about the person who walks in that back door and this whole God thing, this whole church thing, everything about it is totally foreign? The jargon, the lingo, sometimes the clothing, sometimes it's people who gather and work kind of the same thing, wear the same thing, look the same way. And that person walks in the back door and says, you know what, I just don't belong. I don't get it. And I told a friend who's kind of in this category, she came by the office, and I said, you know, it's a process, it's not an event, it takes time to grow and to mature and to develop. And I said to her, sometimes people go to church and they try to do the God thing, and it's like somebody showing up at a polo club. And they walk in and they say, you know, I have this real desire. I've had all my life, I've wanted to learn how to play polo. And I'm here to learn how to play polo. And the person at the door says, well, do you have a horse? Well, no, I don't have a horse. Well, do you have a mallet? Polo mallet? No. Have you got a polo ball? Do you have the boots? Do you have the hat? Do you have the shirt, the pants with the leather on the inside? Do you have a saddle? And you're going to need more than one polo pony. It usually takes four or five per player. And the poor person stands there and says, you don't understand. I don't have anything. But I have a desire to learn. I have a desire to know. I need somebody to help me. Well, ma'am, I'm very sorry. You must be in the wrong place. This is a polo club. People who come here know how to play polo. Where did they learn? Were they born playing polo? Some of them were, and that's the problem. What do you do with people who aren't born playing polo? What do you do with people who aren't born in church? What do you do with people who were born in church and still don't get it? Because they've been through all the religious stuff. They've been through all the schools. They've been to church. They've done the whole thing. And they get on the other side of it and go, I still can't sit on a horse. I still can't hit the ball. It still doesn't make sense. And even if they dress up and get on the horse and look the part inside, it doesn't make sense. Now, what'll kill us in the long haul about as quick as anything is to make this an insider thing and forget the outsider. Because guys, as long as it's working, the outsider will always be welcome, and because of that, they will always come. And we must always be willing, no matter how proficient we are at the game, that there has to be a passion in our heart that when they walk in the door, we say, you know what? Man, we're here not just to play, but to help somebody else learn how to play the game and to get in this thing we call Christianity. And we want you to know God. Don't forget how special it is, how precious it is. And I may not do very well, so you're just going to have to be very patient. I lay in my bed last night with my wife. And this may make some of you guys feel a little better. I have a real hard time praying with my wife. I can pray with Armand and Cindy. I can pray with Bill and Susan. I can pray for you and with you. But I climb in my bed and lay by my own wife, and something inside of me just says, oh, I can't do this. I can't do this. And I started praying. And you know, it dawned on me, I think, last night why it's so hard. Because I get so vulnerable. But the most precious time of my life is laying there by my wife, praying in the bed. And see, what happens to me now happens there. And it's the most vulnerable feeling you'll ever feel. Because she knows me. She knows what I am. She knows what I'm not. And that feeling is what I don't ever want to lose in regard to the God of the universe and the intimacy that I know He has with me and that I can have with Him, and that He loves me and wants to know me. And when I climb in my closet, wherever that is, and say, God, I know You love me and I got to talk to You about this. And we begin to, that sweetness, that preciousness,
When that goes away, guys, with him, it starts going away with me and Marcus. It starts going away with me and Greg. It starts going away between you and somebody else in the room. And then what happens is it starts going away with a complete stranger. See, when I know God that way, I don't care who you are. I don't care where you've been in jail. I don't care what your drug is. I don't care what your lifestyle is. I know that somebody loves me and I deserve hell. And in spite of that, he loved me anyway. Jesus was an outsider. Flip over, if you will, to John chapter 1. Just hold it in Luke 19 for a second. Look at John chapter 1. Now listen to these words. The whole chapter is awesome. But I'm going to read you a few verses. Verse 10. Now this is talking about Jesus Christ. Now look at this. He was in the world. The God of the universe was on the planet, in the flesh. And the world was made through him, and the world did not know him. Can you imagine the God of the universe being on the planet or being in this room? Let's say Jesus Christ, this total stranger, walked in and sat down and nobody knew who he was, and you had the God of the universe in the room and didn't know it. What a tragedy. He was on the planet and the world did not know him. Verse 11, he came to his own. Who are his own? Jesus was a Jew. And he went primarily foremost to the Jews. He came to his own, and his own did not receive him. So it's not just that the world didn't get it. Even the Jewish people in that day who were alive and could see him and touch him and experience him, they didn't even accept him. Verse 12, but as many as received him, to them he gave the right to become children of God, to those who believe in his name, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. And this is repeated in John 3:16, this whole concept of a birth experience. You get on the planet by being born, you get into this family of God by being born a second time. So he came to his own, and his own did not receive him. They rejected him. You know what? Jesus understood what it was to be an outsider, to be an outcast, to be rejected by the establishment, by the religious establishment. They were trying to kill him, and ultimately God allowed it. They hated this man. They either loved him or they hated him. And I can assure you most of the religious establishment hated this man. And the same thing is true today. The religious establishment gets infuriated when you start talking about it being for everybody. No, you people stay in your own corners. You black people stay with black people. You white people with white people. You Hispanic people over there. You people stay in your own corner. Do not come together. Don't say it's for everybody. Whosoever will may come. Because it's not. We don't want your kind. You're outsiders. You're not like us. Let me read you some definitions. You know what the definition for jargon is? It's technical or specialized words or language, as of a science or profession, sometimes considered to be unnecessary or confusing. We have a lot of church jargon that we whip out on people. I'm not saying, guys, I can read you all kind of premillennialism. There's all kind of these things that are technical words to describe something that's true. But don't whip out your words on people who can't play polo. What are we trying to impress people? A second definition is any confusing, pretentious, or meaningless words or language. I've been in churches where I didn't even understand what the guy was talking about. I just listened. I thought, wow, he's pretty smart. I'm pretty stupid. I guess I'll go to another church. Now, if you're a pastor of seminary professors, maybe. Let me tell you something. It ought to be so understandable where little children over here can leave and say, Mommy, I heard something that made sense and Jesus loves me or something. Something ought to be simple and understandable. All right, flip back over to Luke 19. And I'm going to read you a simple story. And to be honest with you, that sometimes we take for granted that everybody knows this story because we all grew up in church. We all did the Sunday school, Bible study, VBS thing. We know all these stories. You know what? Some people have never heard the basic stories that some kids grow up hearing. Here's the story. Then Jesus, verse 1, then Jesus entered and passed through Jericho. Now behold, there was a man named Zacchaeus who was a rich tax collector. He was a chief tax collector and he was rich. And the word rich there means he had lots of stuff. He was filthy rich. In the truest of senses. This guy named Zacchaeus, who was a chief tax collector, and he was rich. Now let me point out here briefly something about tax collectors. They hated tax collectors. Because a tax collector had a deal with the government that if you give us X amount of dollars, we take that, anything over that you keep. So these tax collectors would hit it hard and they would
put huge taxes on people, and there was nothing they could do about it, and they got rich, and they were very alone. They were very rich, but they were very alone because nobody liked them, but there's nothing they could do about it. They had to pay these taxes. But Jesus is coming through Zacchaeus' town, and something inside of Zacchaeus says what? I'm going to see this man. Who is this guy? People, whether you believe it or not, or know it or not, are looking for Jesus. They know something's wrong. They know their money's not working. They know it's not right. They know they've gotten it maybe the wrong way in his case. And something's missing. He is looking for Jesus. Now look what happens. And he sought to see who Jesus was, but could not because of the crowd, for he was of short stature. Now he's not just curious, guys. He is out there and he's not a very big man. The crowd's there and he can't see Jesus over the crowd. So he says, all right, I can't see him this way. Now this is a distinguished tax collecting man in this neighborhood who says, I am going to figure out a way to see Jesus. And this is how bad he wanted to see Jesus. Look at the next verse. So he ran ahead of the crowd. He ran ahead and climbed up into a sycamore tree to see him, for he was going to pass that way. Zacchaeus said, I know they're going through town. This tree hangs over where he's going to go under. I'll get up in this tree. I'll see him. That's as close as I'm going to get, but at least I'll see him. So this distinguished man, not tall enough maybe to see over the crowd, runs down the path, climbs up this tree, and there he sits. And this mob, this throng that follows Jesus around. He runs down, he's in this tree, and look what happens. And when Jesus came to the place, he looked up and he saw him. And he said to him, now guys, that is enough right there to get you going. This guy was disliked, had probably been disowned by everybody in town unless his fellow crooks. And the God of the universe in a body, whether he realizes that or not at this point, he is in this tree, Zacchaeus, and Jesus comes down the path. There are people everywhere. There are distinguished people from the city. I'm sure the mayor's there somewhere. You know, there's a lot of people he could have spoken to. He could have stopped the whole crowd and spoken to a woman or a child. He's going through this town of Jericho. He stops under this tree. And it not only says he looked up, it's one thing to look up. See, people walk in and we go, oh yeah, who is that guy? We see him, we look at him, and we keep going. But somebody walks in and you look at him, and then you see him, and then you speak to him. Now that's different. I see people every day. I look at them, and I keep going. But what happens when you look at somebody, then you really see them, and then you speak to them? That changes everything. There is something, this is going to sound very mundane, maybe very simplistic to some of you, but when you're standing somewhere in a church like this and someone walks in the door you don't know and you look at them, but you never see them, they feel like an outsider. It is possible to look at someone and never see them. But if you look at them and then you see them and they know you've seen them and then you walk up and speak to them, you know what? They say maybe they take outsiders. Because there are people, and you're not going to believe this unless you've ever been there, but there are people today who were on the way to this church, and they woke up in their bed, and they thought about getting out, and they thought about coming down here, and those old voices started playing. You know what? You're different. You won't know where John is. You won't know their songs. You won't be like them. You got too many problems. You're too screwed up. And they lay there, and those tapes go through, and you know what? They never get out of bed, because they're terrified that if they showed up, someone might look at them, but never really see them or even speak to them. And you have no idea what happened. Now, some people are a little intimidated. I'm sure they're a little nervous. This is a freaky experience if you haven't done church in a long time. But be gentle. But when you look at someone, see them and speak to them. It could change their life. It changed this guy's life. Jesus looked up. He saw him and said to him, Zacchaeus. Can you imagine being an outcast, outsider, in a tree, the whole town watching you? You think you're just going to hide in a limb and Jesus go under you, and the whole crowd stops and he goes, Zacchaeus. Now, what do you think the crowd's hoping? You know what they're hoping? Oh, here we go. Jesus is going to get him now. Zacchaeus, you son of a, you know, whatever, and get down here, and you've screwed this whole town up for too long. You're history. That's not where it went. Zacchaeus, hurry up and come down, for I'm going to your house today. I pick you. I know your name. I know what you need. I know what you've done. And in spite of all that, I'm going to stay at your house today. The very person that most people would have rejected because of the business he was in, because of the lifestyle he led, Jesus picked him to make a point. You know why? Because the Bible says that he came to seek and to save that which was lost. In fact, I'll read you that passage. Listen to this. At the end of the story about Matthew being called, I believe it is, they were complaining that Jesus spent time with publicans and sinners. Matthew 11:19 says this, "The Son of Man came eating and drinking, and they say, 'Look, a glutton and a winebibber, a friend of tax collectors and sinners.' But wisdom is justified by her children." Then down in Luke 15:1-2, "Then all the tax collectors and the sinners drew near to hear him. And the Pharisees and scribes complained, saying, 'This man receives sinners and eats with them.'" And eats with them. And if you go back and read the story about Matthew, he said, "Look, I didn't come to save the healthy. I came to save the sick." You know, you don't see a lot of healthy people hanging out at hospitals unless they're there to see someone who's sick. Most people in hospital are sick. In a way, this should be some kind of hospital where there's lots of sick people. Physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. You say, "Well, I'm not sick." Then you're one of the people here to visit those that are and help them make it, help them get home. Not go, "Oh, well, sorry, you're not like us. We're all well. We raise our hands and pray and sing, and, you know, we got this thing down. You're an outsider. Sorry, bucko. Find another spot." "I'm going to your house today," verse 5. Verse 6, "So he made haste and came down and received him joyfully." You know what? I think Zacchaeus had been waiting for years for somebody just to say something kind to him. Just love him. He knew he's a scumbag. Now, I can go around this room, I can go out here and stop at the average person on the street who's into all kind of stuff, drugs, sex, whatever they're doing, and just stop them and say, "Look, just cut to the chase, will you be honest with me? Do you really feel good about your life and your past and where you've been and what you've done?" Some of them would say, "Oh yeah, no regrets." But you know what? There are a lot of people out there who feel about this big. Some of them, stuff they've done under the influence of something they don't even remember, don't even know what they've done. And there's shame, there's guilt, there's just stuff in their head and their heart and their brain. They don't know where to go with it. And the last place you're going to come is here. And this should be the first place they come. Jesus was surrounded with screwed up people who had nowhere to go, and the God of the universe shows up and says, "I'll go to your house." And it made the establishment crazy because they didn't want to be with people who were really like them but didn't know how to play like they weren't. Look at verse 7. And everybody says, "You know they say..." Have you ever heard anybody say that? "Well, you know they say that such and such." Who is they? Well, it's about to show you who they is. "But when they saw it..." Whoever they is here, "when they saw it," all these people, "they all complained." Let me tell you how you'll know you're doing something right for God. Somebody will be criticizing and complaining about it. "Oh, well, they do it this way. They meet in a bar down there trying to reach publicans and sinners." They say, "When they saw it, they all complained." And this is what they said, "He has gone to be a guest with a man who is a sinner." Now, I've said this before, guys, and I'm going to say it again. I am trying to get accused of running around with publicans and sinners. It drives me nuts that nobody accuses me of that. Something is wrong. Why is someone not upset and that I don't get caught with people who are just so far out there they'll never make it unless we do go to them? And you say, "Well, that's dangerous." I understand. If you're an alcoholic and you're going to a bar to reach people, that may not be very wise. But there's plenty of places you can go and be around. The problem, most Christians only know Christians. Now, is that a bad thing? No. But if that's the only people you know, it just gets turned inside. It's an insider deal. How many people do you know who are clueless, don't know anything about God, can't find John, Genesis, anything, don't know how to get in, if there's a way to get in, and they just need somebody to help them? Just need somebody to explain to them and say, "You know what, it's okay. That's what we're here for. We'll take you through the process." We're surrounded by these people at work. And a Pharisaical religious attitude says, "Oh, get away, you know, be separated." Separated is a heart thing, not just a body thing. Okay? And I'm not saying let's go to Hooters and do an outreach. That's not my point. But I'm saying there's a lot of places and a lot of people that we can touch and be out there with and reach that we don't sometimes because they're outsiders. "He has gone to be a guest with a man who is a sinner." Verse 8, "Then Zacchaeus stood and said to the Lord..." There's a lot that happened here. Obviously, we're not getting the whole story. But Jesus goes to Zacchaeus' house and something happens to this man. You can't imagine what unconditional love will do to a person. Most people know they've screwed up. You know what? They need somebody to tell that to and somebody to tell them it's okay, they're forgiven, and to keep going. And that's why Jesus died. So you could deal with the past and get on with your life. Then Zacchaeus stood and said to the Lord, "Look, Lord, I give half of my goods to the poor, and if I have taken anything from anyone by false accusation, I restore fourfold." He had a change of heart. This is a greedy tax collector who had been stealing for years. And now he makes restitution, monetary restitution. And look at verse 9. And Jesus said to him, to Zacchaeus, "Today salvation has come to this house, because he also is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man has come to seek and to save that which was lost." That's why he came. The only reason Jesus came was to seek and to save that which was lost. Do you know anybody who's lost? Really lost? I went with Rebecca and a couple to see a movie, Saving Private Ryan. And the movie begins in a cemetery in Normandy, which I have stood in with my wife. And it is row after row of crosses and Jewish Star of Davids. And I got out of a car in that parking lot, and I walked through those gates, and the most awesome feeling of reverence came over me, like I have never in many places in my life ever experienced. You would not have screamed or said a peep in this cemetery. It was the most unbelievable place I've ever been. And I stood and overlooked the beaches of Normandy. And watching that movie, I remembered again, seeing the battle scenes. And Rebecca said, her dad always said to her, "Where there is freedom, there is bloodshed." And watching that movie, it hit me again. There's a hill in another place where there was bloodshed, where another battle was fought, an eternal battle. Where not 1,000 men, not 2,000 men, only one man. Only one man, the only one who could, where one man died. One man shed his blood on a cross and fought a battle I could never fight or win, and died and was buried and was raised from the dead. See, the awesome thing about Jesus, there's no grave marker. There's no cemetery. There is no place you go and find his remains. He's alive. And because he lived, and he died and shed his blood and was buried and raised from the dead, I can live. You can live.
Richard Ellis will return in a moment to wrap up today's talk with a few final words. But first, I want to share some important information about the program. The reason we do this is to share with you the good news. When you open your heart and life to the saving grace of Jesus Christ, that's the beginning point of the most amazing journey you'll ever experience. But it's also a journey that we want to join with you. So if you've been on this road for a while or just getting started, let us know how we can help. Maybe you've got some questions, stuck in neutral, or even wondering how to take the next breath. We're here. Give us a call at 855-6-RICHARD. You can also connect with us through our website, richardellistalks.com. We're here to celebrate with you too. So if this program has made a difference to you and encouraged you in any way, tell us about it. Let's keep this conversation going by giving us a call at 855-6-RICHARD. You can also send us an email through our website, richardellistalks.com. That would really make our day to know how Richard's talks have helped you. Call us at 855-6-RICHARD or email us through the website, richardellistalks.com. And speaking of the messages, you can find today's talk along with every message from Richard at our website, richardellistalks.com. Finally, we really believe that these talks with Richard are making a difference in your life. So this is how you can make a difference to ours. You can contribute to this ministry by giving us a call at 855-6-RICHARD or at our website, richardellistalks.com. We would be so grateful for your gifts. And Richard's back now to wrap up today's talk.
The outsider who came, died outside, the Bible says, the walls, away from everybody, took on our shame. For what? So that we, as outsiders, could become the insiders in his family and spend eternity with him, but have a life with him as well. And if you've never heard that story, or you've heard it all your life, and it's just been some religious thing out there, I'm encouraging you today to do something about this God, do something about His Son, Jesus. And if you understand that you can't pay for that kind of thing, what are you going to do in a cemetery like that? Throw $100 bills in the graves? There's nothing. What do you give for somebody's life? You just say thank you. And you say, God, I know you love me. I believe Jesus died for me. He was buried and raised from the dead. And this thing is free. And I want this gift of eternal life. And I receive it and I thank you. Period. If you've never done that, you can do it right now and it'll change your life.
Thanks for tuning in today to Richard Ellis Talks. With the busy schedule everyone has these days, it means the world to us that you would take this time to listen. Let us know how it has touched your heart by calling us at 855-6-RICHARD. You can also connect with us at our website, richardellistalks.com. One last thing, Richard Ellis Talks is a daily program, but also has daily costs. And being a listener-supported program means we rely on the financial partnership of our listeners, which means you. Maybe you've given to this ministry before or have waited for the right time. Well, we believe that these talks with Richard are making a difference in your life. So this is how you can make a difference to ours. You can contribute by giving us a call at 855-6-RICHARD or at our website, richardellistalks.com. Thank you for your very generous gifts. It truly means so much to us. God bless, and thanks for listening to Richard Ellis Talks.